everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Kindness Warriors podcast with me, your host, Cassie Roma. Today's episode is an absolutely heartful, helpful, soulful, amazing conversation with the one and only Sally Chan. She has been a friend of mine for years and years and years, and it was an absolute pleasure to spend an hour waxing lyrical with Sally about things that really matter to both of us. Things like inclusion, things like diversity, things like not just throwing words like inclusion and diversity around, but actually digging into access and visibility and power and the perception thereof. We laugh a lot in this conversation. There's a point in time where I almost start to cry because that's Sal's magic. And there's a lot of love and compassion in this one. So I hope you enjoy it as much as we enjoyed having the conversation. As always, your polite and engaged feedback is welcome. Thank you for your time. And I can hear you.
Oh, awesome. This is working.
It's been like, I don't know, the last time we talked, it was like, we were, you know, 2020 sucked, but we were hopeful. This week, Sal, I am like at the bottom of the barrel. I am at the absolute bottom of the barrel.
I think that's what it is. You know, like the people who are like positive like us, we've been trying to stay strong and up, right? And then the world exploded, right? Natural disasters. We have election fatigue here in the U.S. And then, you know, you're just like, I don't know. Like, I can't stay up.
Chelsea said to Carly and I last night, we stayed up to watch. We're watching Bloodline. And we're literally at like season 3, episode 8. And we stayed up until 11 and we had to call it quits. And Chelsea, so here's the kid saying to her mother, it's like, well done. You stayed up past 8:30.
So cute. You're like, thanks, honey.
Oh my God. The election fatigue is real though. Cause we had elections for New Zealand literally 6 weeks before the American election. So my little expat heart is just, I'm just feeling it, Sal.
Is it just, I mean, I feel like, you know, cause we're so right, like US centric and we think like this is what everyone is experiencing. But as I tune into world news, I was like, no, this is happening across the globe, right? Where we're being asked to really confront like what our real values are and what is no longer serving us. Right. So.
Well, and not only that, but and it's taken me this good 20 years, you know, of being away from home. I can remember when, Tex used to tease us about like our accents and little things we'd say and all of that. And like, I go home now and I get it. Like, we are just one big old walking stereotype, the United States. In like the sweetest way possible, like the things we say and our affectations and the different, and I go home and I just, my ears and my brain are on like high alert because it just feels good. But what I've noticed this year, which I haven't noticed in previous years, and probably heightened by not only the pandemic, but you know, 4 years of real interesting rhetoric the world over, is that holy shit, the United States really is looked to as the leader, and not politically speaking only, and not financially speaking only, but you know, our arts, our culture, our music, people care, and it affects more than just America. Like, it is so, even into New Zealand culture, I'll be walking down the street, somebody will be wearing a Kansas City Chiefs hat, and I'm like, yeah, Chiefies. And then they're like, they have no idea what they're wearing. They look at me like, you nuts woman. What are you on about? And I'm like, no. It's a football team from the States on your head. And they're like, oh, we just like it. And we know it's American.
Like, so interesting. We just like it because it's American. It's so true. I mean, every time I go back to Korea, it's like that. It's like, oh, you're American. Like, there's just almost like a fascination because we do influence so much of like global culture. But therein lies the opportunity and danger.
That's right. And how, okay, so tell me how you're feeling after the last week or two. Because we only get what we get here. And I know that's a very broad statement, but from like a perspective of understanding how it feels to be back home and how it feels to be watching whatever you're watching. Like, how do you feel right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was, you know, whatever side you're on politically, and I mean, in full transparency, I've been a registered Republican for as long as I can remember. And then this administration, and then it happened. And it's not an indictment on just one individual. I realized, I was like, maybe like neither party really represents my interests fully. And there's nothing wrong with just being independent, not like independent party, but just being independent. So I could evaluate what, you know, both sides really stand for. But, you know, I think for being in California, obviously there was a collective sigh of relief, because I think the thought was, at least we now don't have to worry about someone in an office making waves or decisions that impact all of us. Like, we already have enough to contend with, right? With joblessness, you know, with just our communities hurting so much that it's nice not to have to worry about what somebody else is deciding, right, in DC. Mm-hmm. So there was a bit of that. I think personally, I don't know. I think there's a part of me that's like, I know that that office is supposed to be the most powerful seat in the world. But part of me is like, looking to, you know, like my fellow brothers and sisters saying, can we not assign away our full agency just to this one individual in that office? Like, we all have the power to do something, right, in our day to day, because people are like, when they're down, right, they've been depressed because they've been so unhappy with the administration and kind of the divided nature of how we're operating as a country. So my thought is like, yes, it's an important office, but before there was President Trump, there was you, your life, the people you love, and how you can show up for them. And so I'm hoping that people just channel that more instead of staying low, right? Or being temporarily high because there's been a shift in the office.
I'm so with you. And maybe it's, again, just this kind of pulling back of the layers and looking at the world through a lens that's a little bit less driven by the narrative of history written by the winners, yes, and a little bit more as like, yes, exactly what you just said, right? What about our friends? What's happening in our community? What's happening with business? What's the heart, the soul, the aura of what's going out into the world? And I think you're right. It's great to have that kind of figurehead in an office, but to understand the fallibility of the human being means that's then right. We get to, yeah. And I think we all have to learn a lot more about the systems and how they work, and then where there are opportunities to do better by them and to maybe, you know, reimagine them. All of these kinds of things, because from the outside looking in, I'm with you. You know, living overseas, it's if you're a Trump supporter, you are racist, you're homophobic, you're a bad person. And if you're not, you're something else. And, you know, I've got a lot of family who voted for Mr. Trump. And I can tell you that they do not assign any of those labels to themselves. So
that's
right. I felt like this entire year has been carrying a large weight of going, you know, there's more nuance than us and them. Mm-hmm. And the way forward, I guess, is like you said, it's more discourse. It's understanding, how do we get together on this? How do we see ourselves as more than just a political label?
That's right. And I wanted to ask you, not to turn the tables around, but you said something that I've been obsessing about for a long time, is that we just don't understand how systems work, but we also don't take the time to understand, right? And the reason I say that is because I've noticed, right, people spend an inordinate amount of time writing Yelp reviews, Amazon reviews, whatnot, right? And I feel like they spend more time figuring out their next meal than they do mm-hmm. on big purchases like buying a house, you know, signing up for a student loan or whatever it might be. Any big decision, I feel like there's not the equal weight, including electing a president or other elected officials. And I wanted to understand, at least from your perspective as an American, as an expat, does that hold true for what you experienced in New Zealand? And why do you think that happens?
Well, we don't really do Yelp reviews or Amazon reviews because those don't exist here. So that is okay. That is a wild concept. That is wild, Sal. No, but I'm picking up what you're putting down. I think it might just be a human thing right now with tech and how we're all kind of beguiled by the sweet fix and the sparkly nature of the easy stuff. So it is easy to go onto Facebook, log on, have a read of something that may or may not be true information. And it's way easier than to understand, how do I save for a mortgage? How do I want to even buy a house? What's the, and I dig even deeper now because I'm that hippie who's almost 40, right? And I'm like, maybe like, what's my purpose on earth, man? Like, do I need to own this piece of land? Can I ever really own this land? And then what's the reason for me diving deeper into understanding the implications of my vote, of where I spend my money, of where I spend my time in offices and jobs and corporate buildings. And for me now, as you know, as a mother of a almost 15-year-old, 15, holy cow, I know. I see the world through her eyes and I'm going, okay, so my only job now is to ensure that my kids and your kids and our next generations, our nieces, our nephews, the next generations live a better and more maybe informed life about the choices that they make. You know, life isn't supposed to be easy, but also we can really help other people with their struggles if we're a bit more cognizant of things beyond just what's on the surface. And you know, but then it's like you look at Kamala and you look at Joe Biden, who's been doing this for years, and you look at all of these people, and they're like me and you. They're humans. They're good people. Right. I think, you know, from what I see, and you go, okay, so what is driving them? If they really feel like they understand the system enough to be able to do that, that's great. But I know my fear for even thinking about politics would be, I don't understand the system and I haven't done the digging like we've just talked about.
Right, right. It's the perception of what we think life in politics is like, right? It's captured in movies and television shows. And you're like, why would I trade my life now for that? But obviously there is a draw, right? For folks who feel like they do have either a lot of money or have achieved a lot, it's sort of on their list is like, I want to run for office because, right? I think like everybody wants a legacy of some sort. And there's no other role like being in politics where you have that opportunity. It's like baked into the job description, right?
Right, right. And that, I mean, that opens up a whole other can of spiritual and worms, doesn't it? About like what drives us to do what we do. And from an ego perspective, will we ever be satisfied until we're just completely present? That's what this year, oh my God. And maybe that's the weight that we've been feeling too, is I have felt like there's been so many people who've been actively trying to learn and engage and be more compassionate and empathetic and to step outside of, you know, you and I've talked a lot about like, I knew I was privileged. I walk around with my privilege on my skin and my eye color and where I come from, but I never understood the depth of it or how I could utilize that to help lift others. And this year that's been like a beautiful unlearning. And I know there's still so much to go. But at the same time, you go, okay, a lot of folks have started this process and we are fucking late to the game. And, you know, we can apologize or we can act. And I'm going to do both. But then there's the whole other group of folks. Like you see the folks who've made the most money this more, the billionaires made more billions while everybody else, you know, is having a hard time just getting by. So it's that push and pull of humanity and going, how can so many of us care so much? And then the others are like, we're out. We want this money. We want this ego. We want this next thing. Right. Think about that all the time.
I think about that all the time too. I think that's why we're friends. well, because, you know, I don't know. I always believe that like we all, not, I shouldn't say all because there's no absolutes, but many of us like grow up with this desire to, right, like be good people, make good choices. And it wasn't always about money. So I'm always like fascinated about that, like that pivot for a lot of folks where that becomes almost a singular sole focus of your life, right? The accumulation of all the wealth, right, that you can amass. Mm. And at the end, like for what? Right? I mean,
that's right.
For what is the question that I'm left.
Yeah, because you can't take it with you when you go. And
that's right.
You know, you've got two little ones, and you know, with Chelsea this year, and it almost breaks my heart to say this, but I've spent more time with her this year than I ever have in her entire life, because I've had to work from the day she was born. Well, basically,
that's right,
3 weeks from the moment she was born. And this year to have, you know, a good just 6 week chunk while we were all at home during lockdown, I got to know this kid, man. And I'm not just being her mom and biased, but what a kid, like smart and compassionate and thought out. And he must have skipped a generation. She must be like a grandparents.
Oh, please. No, but it's true. I love what you're saying, because I respect that there are a lot of parents and, you know, caregivers who are like, oh, it's been so hard and challenging to have the kids in the house because you're trying to juggle a new normal. But, you know, this idea of unlearning that you talked about earlier, I've been thinking about that too. It's like we've subscribed to this model where our norm is we drop off our kids with someone else, right? And then we go work for 10, 12, 14 hours. We spend maybe an hour with our kids at night. And you're just like, we're surprised when we don't have a relationship with our kids, when we don't really know who they are and they don't know who we are, what we stand for. I think that's what we're all trying to fix. And it's uncomfortable. And I'm not saying that there aren't, you know, a whole bucket of issues of having to juggle, right? And having kids at home while you're either trying to work or whatnot. But I wonder if we could see sort of the beauty, right, in this gift that we're given this year, this forced reset where you're, you know, fixing what's broken in relationships, getting to know people that you should know better, like people under your own roof, right? Yeah.
Well, I feel like 2020 has been make or break for, you know, especially for a lot of couples. I've had a lot of friends who have just basically said, I don't know the person who I've been sharing my life with. And, you know, there's been just as many, I think, growth stories as there have been stories of folks going, actually, we don't know each other anymore. So what's the next step? And it has been a forced reset. But then I see folks just continuing that pre-COVID hustle, that I must move, I must be busy, because busy means I'm important, and important in the eyes of society means that I'm doing well. And if I'm doing well, then exactly what you just said, Sal, I don't have to stop and understand who I am.
Yes. It always boils down to identity, doesn't it? Right? It's like the value in your identity and your sense of belonging. And I feel like we could do like 5 hour podcast, maybe longer, 500 hour podcast, just about that. It's that I think that does drive, right, why people operate the way that they do and don't want to change, because it's like your identity is everything. And if it's tied to your value, right, like your value is tied to your identity, then I get the hustle. I just wonder at the end of the day if it's worth it, right? Like the trade-off.
That's right. I mean, I've left the corporate world this year, so I've had a lot of time to be a real nerd and geek out. I've been reading so many kind of end of life research papers, and I know that sounds a bit macabre, but those end of life research papers have been the most fulfilling things I've read, because that little tug in our heart where we're going, you know, I feel like I need to slow down and just, I don't know, sometimes I just sit on the ocean with a friend on a paddleboard and I feel higher than a kite. You know, I feel closer to God. I feel all of these things that I hadn't felt before. And at the end of life, people are saying, slow down, be with your kids. Don't give your whole life and your whole identity away to a business, to an entity, to a corporation. But then we have to go, okay, so how do we juggle that with a modern world where we have to pay bills and where we live in a certain way? And is there a way to unpack all of that? I think you're right. This could be like a 5 hour podcast.
It is, because I love that you're doing that. I know you're like, it sounds morbid, but I actually think that's so wise. Like I do that too, because I'm like, I want to talk to people who've lived, right, like 80, 90 years, because they are privileged. They're fortunate to have lived a long time and to see things and to learn things and observe. And if they are all landing at a very similar sentiment, which is slow down, spend time with your loved ones. I think it behooves us to listen. You know, I know we often discard like our parents, you know, advice or like our grandparents or anybody that's sort of a guardian and older because you're like, yeah, yeah, that's your experience. It's not my narrative. But you're like, well, maybe give them a little bit more respect and room to say they've seen things, they know things, and we would be lucky to learn from, right? Like what they've observed.
Yeah. This year has been a really fantastic year, even though, so I'm doing some documents. I'm preparing some documents for the United States government because the United States government is a wild gal who requires people who live overseas to do a lot to retain their American status. So I've been looking through like how many times I've been home in the last 4 or 5 years. And in 2018 alone, I think I flew home 5 times south and got to see my parents 7 times that year because mom and dad came this way as well. Wow. And this year, not having seen my parents, mom and I have spent a lot more time on the phone. Like I'll go for a long walk in the morning and I'll just call mom because the time difference is great. So sometimes we'll talk for 10 minutes. Sometimes we'll talk for 2 hours. And she has told me so many stories about how she feels like she missed out on my childhood and Rob's childhood. She's told me about, you know, if she could do things over again with work. She worked for the same place for 37 years. And when she left, she had a nice little party. And then that was it. Kind of take your things and see you later. So she has really imparted on me a lot of wisdom this year, which I don't know if I would have been as open or as apt to truly listening to before. And, you know, little things like walking Chels to the bus stop to catch a school bus every morning. I really look at those moments and go, holy shit, how lucky am I to do this?
And I think it would be so powerful if that became normalized or normative or socialized, right? You know, I know you and I speak to a lot of folks and try to mentor them about like women having it all. What does that all mean? And I joke and I say, well, you know, it's kind of cool that men can go to like sporting events or golf tournaments. And that's like the supremo networking event. It'd be nice if like women could go to a nail salon and it'd be taken just as seriously. But I mean, I think separate from that, I mean, I think I also like respect that like I have this opportunity to be a mom and also, you know, have the ability to work. But I think we should be given that space to just enjoy it for what it is, because it is those moments, right? Those are the moments that you're going to remember when you're, you know, towards the end of life. And I just wish that that could be socialized as like beautiful and valuable versus like, oh, I'm just a house mom or whatever it might be, like, you know, the stereotypes that still exist here, you know, in 2020.
So, well, speaking of that, so we have known each other now for, oh my God, almost 20 years. But for how long? Like for the last 10 years, we kind of like went and did our own things and we've reconnected. And I think one of the most beautiful things is that it's like you and I picked right back up from the last time we spoke. But I was thinking about it before we hopped on to record this, because there are folks like, say, from high school on my Facebook where I'm like, we grew up together. We looked the same. Our family values were similar. We went to the same schools. We had the same teachers. We heard the same lessons. But holy cow, we could not be more divergent or different in our views about humanity and human rights issues, not even political issues. And then here's me and you who met on a Contiki tour.
In our formative years, yes.
with starkly different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it feels like we were just meant, our souls were meant to meet each other and to know each other. So I would love it if you would just take the listeners of the podcast through a little bit about your life and your background.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Sally Chan. And during the day, I have the awesome opportunity to work in social impact or at corporate social responsibility, as many say. All 20 years, I've worked in media and entertainment. So I've been lucky to see how, you know, just even representation shapes what people believe about themselves, about others. And as we've talked about, you know, leading up to this moment, is that, you know, that could be a good thing. And then that there are some dangers there. But I think I've always been attracted to that, this idea of access, representation, getting people to really kind of see themselves for who they are. But, you know, that's my day job. I think my important role is that I'm a mom to two beautiful boys, a four-year-old and a two-year-old going on 5 and 3, or maybe 15 and 13. and then also another important role, of course, is of being a wife to a law enforcement, you know, officer, and also someone who serves in the U.S. Army. So I wear another sort of title there. Over the past 10, 20 years, I mean, what can I share? I mean, I think I'm so lucky. Like, I get to work for large corporations that have a lot of influence, right, over society, and also have the funds and access to be able to help local nonprofits and other organizations that really need support to carry out their mission. I was always drawn to this work, I think, because at the core of it, right, like when you were young, and I'm going to ask you this question a little later, but I think when you're like 5 years old, before you're like polluted by other people's agenda, you kind of have a sense of like what you want to do in this world, right? And I remember at a very young age, like I always wanted to just help other people. It's like as broad as that. It's like, I just want to be of service and help people. And I think I was always drawn to like professions like counseling and teaching, even at 5, right? It's just those, you know, authority figures were the ones I was always attracted to, because it was nice to be able to like, be able to pass on information or knowledge to others so that it would help them on their journey. And I think I've been so blessed that just following that sort of North Star has led me to this type of work that really fuels me every day, because as you know, there are not a lack of people who need help and who just need a little, you know, push or just a little hand just to say like, you are seen, you are known, you are heard, and you can exercise your agency, but maybe right now you just need somebody to remind you about that.
Ooh, I love that. I love that. So I have lots of questions. You said, okay. You said heaps of stuff there that I love. Especially, you know, especially as a woman, and I'd say, especially, you know, with your background, Korean American woman in big corporates, especially in those entertainment industry, corporates, representation and access, do they go hand in hand? And if not yet, how do you think, what are some of the best ways that we can all start building in that representation, moving towards actual access for others? Is it doing things like you're doing now and being that person on the inside who is advocating for others? Is it, you know, community deep dives? What do you think, Sal? You know this better than I do.
Yeah, that was such a good question. I was just thinking about your earlier comment about how, you know, there are people who grew up with you that look like you, kind of grew up in the same community, but you could not be more different. So what is it different about your and my connection? And I think it's just that. It's like you and I have an openness, right? A desire to constantly learn and evolve. And I think that's going to be the antidote for kind of how we recover, right? As a society, as communities, as a world. And like, I know there this year, especially working in the social impact space, we seem to still want to compartmentalize diversity, equity, inclusion, social justice, as if it's like a little part, like a little bucket where you're like, we're going to hire that one chief diversity officer and they're going to, you know, fix centuries of systemic racism and they're going to make this place wholly inclusive. And I'm like, I don't want to dilute that. I think that's important to have somebody dedicated and paid to do that important work. But I think if we're not all owning our piece of it and saying, I'm willing to learn, I'm willing to unlearn, I'm willing to challenge what doesn't work anymore, like we're never going to fix this, right? Because not one person can fix, you know, all the issues that we face as a society. And I think these issues that we talk about, it's an iterative process too, right? It's like, we're not going to figure it out overnight because this problem didn't come to surface overnight. So yeah.
Correct.
Like, Yeah, I think representation definitely does help. And I know, you know, social impact, there's a piece that they play. I mean, I always refer to like Kofi Annan, like former UN Secretary General, who always talks about like philanthropy is helpful and it's needed, right? Because there are always people who are going to need assistance to kind of be able to, kind of get to that next phase. But like true change, true alleviation, breaking the cycle of poverty is going to come once you introduce people into a free market economy. And I think, not to be, not the nerdy sentiment of that, but I think at the core of it is this idea of access and inclusivity. Once we make everything normal and socialized, and we allow everybody to have a role to tell their story the way they want to tell it, I think that's when we see the change in behavior. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, I could create a program where we like bring more people from underserved communities into our industry. And I think that's all helpful. But the real change comes when, like, the main actor or a story being told about a community is kind of told in the main, like the main theater, right? Because then more people are exposed to it, and then they then develop new perceptions and beliefs about said person or said community. And I think there are dangers in telling that story the wrong way, but there's also such amplification of like empowerment that comes when you feel like, oh, I can relate to that character. Oh, that story seems familiar. And I mean, I think that's the key to the change.
Oh, all of the memes from recent times have, you know, they've just hit my brain, and like the heartful memes. I know when Kamala and Joe, quote unquote, won the election, I'm sure it's going to happen, but you know, this is pre-confirmation, It was, you know, all the little girls, especially little girls and women of color walking, and now, you know, Kamala leading the way. It's that if you can see it, you can be it story that, I mean, I have wept tears of joy, Sal, for weeks now, because I just think it's so important that especially young people can see, and especially girls and young girls who aren't, you know, who just don't look the same as everybody else has forever. Right. I think it's so important that we start to, and you nailed it. And maybe this is because I'm a storyteller. It's it's allowing people to not only tell the stories that matter, but to amplify the stories that aren't the narrative we've heard for the last 500 years, for the last 1,000 years, even for the last 10 years. Chelsea is looking to do film. So she started really dive. Yeah. She started to dive into cinematography, into the different ways that filming techniques look, into script writing, into how music affects a mood on screen. And it was an amazing thing a few weeks ago. She's in love with Jake Gyllenhaal. FYI, anybody out there listening who knows Jakey? I mean, both of her mothers love Jake too. One of the things was we started to talk about the movies she's been watching, and she hadn't quite clicked that every single movie being told that she has been fascinated by had male characters as the central figure. In every single movie, and female characters were either secondary or tertiary. And since we've told her that, and since she started to look out for it, she'll come home now and she'll go, hey, I saw this thing on YouTube, or I saw this thing on Netflix, and this was told from a female's perspective, this was told from a queer perspective. And I'm like, dude, for a 14-year-old kid, once you start to open up somebody's mind to there are different ways to tell this story that are just as valid, just as equal, just as interesting, and could potentially sell just as much at the box office, then it's to see just one child's mind open up has filled my heart with joy. So I can only imagine how that representation plus access, and then just the storytelling, that genuine, authentic storytelling, could really help to change the world.
It's true. And I always cite the example, like, you remember like CSI or NCIS, like they finally cast like women in the main lead. And in society, they actually saw more women actually applying for those jobs in real life because they're like, oh, I'm seeing it on TV, so it must be doable. It's like it opens someone's aperture to say, one, those jobs, first of all, exist. And two, if women could be in those roles, then why am I not applying for it? And that's what I mean by I wish things would become more mainstream and normal, because me working in CSR or social impact, it's helpful, right? But you'll make a slight dent in an issue, right? But if you become, this is the main stage and everybody's like seeing it, then you're now able to like sort of unlock, right? What has been closed off to kind of larger groups. And so I totally believe like we need to focus more of our energy there, right? Making that.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Visibility. I read another scientific, I'm such a dork this year. I read another paper on visibility, the difference between visibility and perceived power and visibility and actual power. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the crux of it was that without visibility, you will have neither perceived or actual power. Wow. And for a woman who came late to the party of coming out, it's been interesting for me to even watch the opportunities that I'm given. So here in New Zealand and Australasia, I do a lot of speaking and different kinds of things. And I'm given a lot more opportunities than other folks who might be in the LGBTQ community. And I always kind of look at that and I go, okay, how do I navigate that? How do I hand this over? How do I lift someone else by being visible? And that's, again, that's a small movement. But the next step, that bigger step, how do we get there, Sal? How do we get to the table and how do we make it bigger? I guess that's the next question.
You know, it is a good question. And I think we all want the answer to be really like big and grandiose. But I think it's exactly what you're doing, right? It's like when you're speaking, right? Like you create an environment or foster sort of a culture where folks who've been traditionally felt like left out of the conversation are then included, right? Like, or if you're at a meeting, like there's somebody who hasn't been included to include them. I think it's like, I know we're all waiting for this like perfect, right? Just like the perfect vaccine and it's going to cure all. But I think it requires, right, the actions leading up to that, right? Wearing a mask, washing your hands, right? Social distancing. I think it works the same way. It's like, while we wait for this magical vaccine, I think what all of us can do is just figure out in our own circle, whether it's your family, your relationships, your community, whatever organization you belong to, it's like, what are you actually doing to make that place more accessible, more inclusive, more equitable, not only for somebody else as if it's relegated to charity, but just because it's better for all of us, right, to operate that way. And I think
that's right.
Yeah, that's the agency thing we're talking about, right? Like not waiting for our leaders, presidents, you know, electeds or whatever to come up with the answer, but us seeing a problem in front of us and then addressing it.
And sometimes it's scary, isn't it, to address it. Sometimes, I know we talked about discomfort earlier about leaning into all this change and stuff. What would some advice that you could give to folks who might feel a little bit nervous about acting or speaking up? What are some of the things that folks can do to feel, even if it's a support of their own confidence? Because I know having sat around lots of big tables with big budgets and decision-making processes, there have been times where I've been scared shitless to speak out. And, you know, there have been times where I haven't. And there have been times where I have. And it's uncomfortable and it's scary.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like the perfect question for me because, I mean, I'm a balanced extrovert introvert, but I lean towards introversion. Yes. I'm far more analytical in meetings, in business school. Like I was rarely the person to raise my hand, right, to answer a question, even if it meant I was being docked for participation. So I think there's an element of, you know, when people say you have to build your confidence, I think we need to break that down a bit. I think confidence, it just comes from when you are comfortable and able to get to a point of owning what you're about to say, owning what you feel, right? So in terms of like speaking up and out, I'm not necessarily the advocate who's always like, you see it right in front of you, you better speak up, because you might not yet feel quite, you know, confident in your ability to do that. But I think it comes with practice and really going, knowing yourself enough to know, like, in this moment, it matters for me to be, to speak up and get a little bit outside of that zone so that I change the environment in a way that, right, like, helps all of us. And I think that's just developed over time, right? Like, not everyone is going to go into that, like, board meeting, sit at the table and be like, well, I completely disagree with what you have to say, CEO, right? But I can imagine with you, Cass, is that, like, over time, you've become a subject matter expert. You are the one that many people look to, right, for advice on specific topics or issues. So along with that kind of affirmation and you're honing your skill or craft, you become uber confident, right? In talking about a number of these things. And so then you get to a point where you're at the table and you can speak confidently. And I think that's the journey we're all on, whether it's a salary negotiation, speaking up because somebody like took your parking spot, somebody pushed someone stole something, whatever you're observing, right? Like, the confidence comes because you're like, who am I? What is my role? And what do I feel I'm being called to do in this moment to make it right? Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, I think one of the biggest predictors of growth and understanding confidence in yourself is, again, it goes back to our visibility conversation, because I had some female leaders who would say to me, I'd say to them, basically, wow, that was amazing. Where did you find the confidence? How did you build that muscle? All of those kinds of things. And they would say to me, I was scared. And because they were open with the fact that it wasn't always easy and that we had to choose sometimes the discomfort to get back into a place that was truly inclusive or true to what we were thinking, that has made it easier for me over years, not, you know, like two meetings, but over years, to also be able to share with other younger folks and other people in my industry that I am confident most of the time, but I'm also happy to walk into a room and say, I'm just going to sit here and listen because I am the least informed person. And that doesn't mean I'm not paying attention, but I want to take this all in. And then my little introvert brain takes it away and will think on it and come back to you. So even if I don't react in the moment, I will come back to you and I do care for you, but sharing the fact that, you know, you don't have to be in a meeting all the time and respond quickly. You don't have to be the loudest. You don't have to say the most, because again, that's what we've heard, right? In workplaces, the people who speak the most are respected the most. The people who talk the most are looked to be the smartest. And that's, you know, I call bullshit on that. As long as you have leaders that go, actually, I felt uncomfortable there. Here's how I would navigate that. Then I think we're all going to be okay, because it goes back to what you were talking about earlier, the authentic story, the authentic self. And then also you asked about, like, when you were five, you wanted to help people. And I'm very much the same, but I always wanted to help people through connection, and whether that was introducing you, Sally, to somebody else, or whether it was going, oh my God, you love a certain kind of music, you should listen to this new album.
Right.
Whatever it was going to be, there always had to be a connective tissue, because it was just the soul I was born with. I just look at every single person on this earth and I'm like, wow, we can find the similarity.
Yeah.
So when we find that similarity, I find the confidence and the connection and the community side of things translates across titles. It translates across jobs. It translates across creativity. And that's where true confidence lies, you know?
Yeah. And I think you're just encapsulating, like, what we both believe wholeheartedly. It's like, I think all of us, whether we're denying it or not, right, like, thirst and crave, like, connection and authentic relationship with other people, because it affirms a lot of what we know about ourselves and what we, like, who we want to be in this lifetime. And so I think oftentimes when we shy away from connection or, create groups that are designed to sort of divide people, it's because you've been hurt, right? It's because you've right. felt rejection at some point in your life or some sort of pain or trauma. But I think that still doesn't take away from deep down this idea that we all want to belong to one another, right? But have a sense of belonging, have a sense of purpose. And I wonder if we could all focus on that sort of sameness and oneness, if we wouldn't achieve all those other things that we aspire for, right? Like equality, you know, everything else.
That's right.
About. I think if we just all kind of could stay in that lane of knowing, like, we are all the same, like you and I, we can be worlds apart, right? Like leading different lives. But I think at the heart of it, it's like, we want to take care of our family. We want our kids to be safe. We want a roof over our heads. Like, we want to be able to find meaningful work, whether paid or unpaid. And I wonder, does that not hold true for most people in this world? Right.
So. I'm with you. And then to build on that, I think when it comes to the point too, where, as you were saying, you know, you want to take care of your kids, you want a roof over their head, you want to make sure they're fed and their souls are also healthy. I was like, yeah, I want that for your kids, Sal. I want that yes. for my brother's kids. I want that for everybody's yes. family, people I don't know. Even the folks who are out there that I wholeheartedly disagree with, I look at them and my heart just breaks because I go, where is the world that we're living in? Where have we gone so wrong
yeah.
that anger and violence and division and derision can sometimes be what drive people to feel like they're finally part of a community when,
yeah,
I don't know, the house I grew up in and the America I grew up in, I mean, we are completely imperfect. We have, you know, we're half California, half Missouri. We got all kinds. we got every type of fuck up and every type of beautiful human you will ever find all right here in my genetic pool.
Love it.
But we all loved each other. And
yeah.
it's, I hope and I pray that this year will bring out the best, and that we will all be able to find the compassion and the empathy to go, you know what? I'm gonna listen to you. I might not agree. I'm gonna log off of Facebook. I'm gonna have mm-hmm. more chats with my friend Sally. Mm-hmm. And look forward to those little steps, because you're right. Life doesn't have a 95% vaccine that's going to help us every time. We got to do right. little things to help each other.
That's right. Oh, I love it. And I've been listening to the song. I would share with anybody who's willing to listen. You know, like that Eagle song, Love Will Keep Us Alive. There's this Hawaiian artist, Josh Totofi and Maui. They do like a beautiful rendition of it, but either version is great. But it's that central message. Like, if you're just into music and you go back, you know, a decade, two decades, you know, or more, it's like, that's the prevailing message, right? Like, love will keep us alive. Like, that's what every sort of generation before us knew and understood. And so I hope that that's something that our generation and the ones to follow will continue to carry and know sooner rather than later, right? Like, we shouldn't have to wait till end of life to kind of finally realize, like, that's what's been keeping us alive so far, and that's what will heal and promote, like, growth and progress.
Oh, Sal, what a place to wrap it up. Love will keep us alive. You are just you are a podcast queen. And cut.
No, I'm sorry. Like, that song, I've been, it's like, I'm like, I think his YouTube hits are going up because of me, and hopefully he'll give me free concert tickets when it's safe to attend. But yeah, I keep like obsessing about the lyrics. And I was like, it's so simple, like most beautiful songs and poems are, but it's like, that's the core, you know?
So, like, I'm with you. This year has been going back in time for me with music, and then also finding new music. And you're right. I'm thinking about it right now. All the stuff I love, it's either, yes. it's made me laugh, or it's been about love and connection. And there's a song out, there's a singer called Brandi Clark and another singer called Brandi Carlile. So two B's.
Yes,
two
Brandis, of course. Yes.
And they've got this song called Like Mine that they just put out. And it's literally, it's like, you've got a heart like mine, and you've got, you know, mm. it's shaped like mine, and it breaks like mine. And we've got all of these things going on in our lives, but holy cow, sometimes I forget that we are similar, and that it's our love and our humanity is going to keep us together. And it's like, oh, Sal.
Yeah, it is. Like, I mean, right? Like every artist, right? I mean, theologian, you know, whatever, like philosopher, like they all talk about love, Shakespeare, like in every art form or whatever, it's like, that's what they focus on. So like, why do we like laugh at it? Or like, you know, be like, oh, that's so cheesy or this. I'm like, yes, because maybe media has made it cheesy, right? In one note, but love, however you define it, is the answer. Love of people, love of yourself, love of community. And I just think like that's what needs to be talked about more instead of like everything that divides us, because that's easy, right? Like I could come up with a hit list really quickly. But love is hard to do. But once you've got it, like, right, it attracts, it heals, it promotes. It's all of it.
It's so indefinite, right?
It's indefinite. You. Yes. Girl.
I think about it all the time. Oh, I think about like the heart's capacity to love daily. Yeah. So I'm like, think about the world and think about, you know, the darkness of space and think about the lightness of the universe, and then think about love. And it is so much more infinite and indefinite than any of that. Like our brain can't even start to comprehend it. And the love you feel for your kids and the love you feel for your friends. And, you know, I even walk down by the ocean and it's like, you can feel a buzz of just universal love. And I'm just, yeah, we could talk about this forever.
I'm dying. I'm like literally tearing up right now because no one has ever put that way before for me, but like the heart's capacity, love is indefinite and infinite, right? Wow. Like I'm like blown away. I moved to tears by how like beautiful that sentiment is. Cause I remember like when I was waiting for Ethan to be born, my second, like people were like, oh, you know, all the mothers would tell me like your heart and just love is just going to grow even more. And I was like, how is that even possible? Because just the depth of love I had for Lucas, my first. And then I was like, oh, this is what I mean. But I was like, to your point, like, why do we ever put a limitation on it, right? Just because I love my kids doesn't mean I can't love my neighbor or, you know, people I work with and anyone kind of in my ether. So that's a beautiful, like, I'm going to hang on to that. Like, right. I need you to create some artwork so I can put it on my wall.
I mean, I will make you a meme. Okay, I'll make you a quote for Instagram. But this is one of those things too that I think we get to take with us this year because, you know, I never slowed down enough to really, really think about it. But I was thinking about the journey. So, I mean, we've known each other long enough. You were actually there the day I met my ex-husband. You were my bridesmaid at my first wedding. Yeah. wedding. You were there for, you saw, you know, birth of my child, you saw all of these things. And then, you know, we lost touch for all these years, came back and here I'm married to a woman and there's all these questions and all these beautiful things. But what I found over the years is, you know, I will always love my ex-husband. I will always love my child. I will love my wife. This year specifically, I was looking back and I'd lost 6 friends that were colleagues and over the last few years to suicide. They were just too stressed.
No.
There was a lot going on. And these were folks just in the creative industries I've been working in. And that's 6. Wow. That's a lot of folks.
That's a lot. Yeah.
That's a lot of folks. And I was going, you know, if there's an infinite amount of grief and tears to be cried and pain to feel, there has to be an equal amount of love. So this year I've just been making it real weird for my friends. You should be lucky you're like 6,000 miles away, because I've been telling my friends, I've been telling them I love them all the time. I've been kissing their foreheads. I've been squeezing them, hugging them, spending time with them. We can do that in New Zealand. It's safe here.
And I love that for everybody. I love that, right? Like when it is safe other places, I'm like, yes, that's what we aspire to here in the US.
Right. But it's not Hollywood's idea of love, where like you are married to someone and that is all of your heart, or your kids are all of your heart. Your heart has this reach that's limitless. And so this year I've just been just real crazy with it. Just telling people I love them. Like even I had an Instagram post up earlier this week and a guy that I've been working with for 2 years, who's really, he's not a hugger and he's not a, he's not an, he's not an emotional guy. He said something. And I said, I just love you, Dean. And he went, I know you do. This is so you. And he said, it means a lot to know that that you love me. And I was like, well, I do. And now it's real weird.
Oh my gosh. I love that. I really do. Because it's like, I wonder how many times, like if throughout the day, if just people were like, I love you, like how that would feel. It would feel awkward as hell, but you can't say deep down, you're like, that's great. Like that actually made me feel good. Right.
Like, thank you.
Really, if we went through life like that, that would just be a much better experience than what most people experience on a daily basis, right? Like,
100%. You would never question.
Yeah, yeah. And yet we're so ready to accept the former, right? Like, you're not good enough. Like, you're in my way. And then when someone says, I love you, you're like, I'm sorry, I have to reject that. That makes me feel weird and awkward. See, that socialization again. If we made that normal, what would change in our world?
It is. I mean, I was having a real rough week this week, on the floor, ugly crying, questioning my own worth. And I went and spent some time with a friend yesterday and her kids. And the last thing we said is, as we, left the house was, I love you so much. And, I love you so much back. And then, the week's just infinitely better now. So,
yeah. What triggered that? Can I ask? Like because I always feel like there's a trigger, right? And then whether you subscribe to like the Enneagram, like the motivation or fear motivation, like what is that typically for you?
I think it's been probably now 50 weeks of trying to remain optimistic and to buoy the spirits of others and to rise, to lift others. It's been adding to that, not being able to see my own family. I think regardless, every year from basically Halloween through to New Year's, I really miss home. I miss traditions. I miss family. I miss, pumpkin spice everything. I miss people in sweaters because it's hot as bejesus here.
Yeah.
So it's all of that. And then also there's typical things like money stuff. Like this is a pandemic year. I started my own business. Yeah. The business went off to a rollicking ride, a great start. I saved up heaps of cash, but then, I'm planning a trip home now in April and I'm starting to look at exchange rates are not so good. So if the trip's going to cost me $7,000, it's actually going to probably be $20,000 of my dollars. So I start to think of, I do my worst case scenario planning in my head.
Yeah.
And then it's just, I needed that time yesterday with a toddler and a good friend to pull me out of that and to go, you've saved that money and you'll make more money. You need to go hug your people. You need to go home. And it was like, okay, yep, that's the reality check I needed.
And I find that like with givers like yourself who are always giving, right? Whether it's your joy, your optimism, problem solving, or an ear, it's like when it finally comes time to like spending time, money on yourself, right? So that you could be made whole. We're like, no, I can't, right? Like, it's like, well, should I be taking that plane ride? But it's like so counter to the advice we give to other people, right? Practice self-care, invest in yourself. You're worth it. You work hard, but it's so hard, like when it comes to ourselves. So yeah, I find those valleys often, right? Like where I'm just like, and I'm just like, okay, Sally, like, what is triggering this, right? And it always comes down for me. It's like not feeling of worth or like valued because I find that in helping others. So when I can't even help myself, I'm like, how am I supposed to help others, right? So it is that trap that I try to look out for. And I was like, the only solution is to love myself.
That's right. Love myself. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that's one of those easier said than done things, isn't it? That, therapy is good for. Good friends are good for. And, not to be one of those codependents out there who's like, I just needed my friend to say I was worthy. But sometimes, you do just need that little, hey, you're okay. Take a deep breath and go on. And then the self-kindness kind of rallies. Thank you so much, Sal. I love you. And I can't wait for the next one.